All right. What up, guys? Welcome to episode 2 of The Venturing Man. It's been a couple weeks. You know, life gets in the way sometimes. And we are here, though, putting out the next episode. We got some cool things and some people planned for the following episodes after that. But today you got myself and Parker here. What's going on, bud?
What's up, man? How are you?
Doing good, man. I am recovering from another COVID bout, and so that got that pretty much. It was probably right after. I mean, within a couple of days after we recorded the last episode, I can't remember what day we recorded that one on, but I'm pretty sure it was right after that, and so. I didn't know I had it again and was working out with it and training with it. So now I'm just having some issues, with the long COVID, but recovering. So no big deal. How about you, bud? What you been up to?
not a whole lot, man. I mean, that's not true, but it feels like it. Sometimes it feels like there's so much going on, but nothing going on all at the same time. Mm. But yeah, I think I told you the other day, I've had some things floating around in my head and some stuff that I wanted to get into. Mm-hmm. So I think why not just jump right on into it?
Yeah, man. Well, so, I know you got some new ventures going on with, in the entrepreneur space and stuff. And so you got some stuff to talk about there, or what's going on?
Yeah, really just personal growth and some of the things that I've learned about myself recently. But you know, this whole podcast is called The Venturing Man, and venturing is daring to do something. I don't know about you, but I catch myself getting paralyzed to take a step sometimes. So even though I'm out trying to make things happen, trying to provide for my family, trying to do whatever it is that I'm trying to do, I catch myself stumbling at the beginning. And for a long time, I haven't really understood why I do that. But recently I was on a Zoom call with a fitness coach, a mental coach. He kind of does a lot of different things, but what he was talking about was self-identity and a lot about are the limiting beliefs that we tell ourselves. And so kind of what I wanted to get into is, you know, if you're daring to do something or you have the desire to do something, but you catch yourself stumbling at the very beginning, why is that? And for me personally, one of the things is what it is that I tell myself every day. There's days where I get up and I'm feeling shitty or got into it with my wife or got into it with the kids, or I did something stupid that I shouldn't have done, whatever it might be. But I start telling myself all these, hey, you're a piece of crap. Hey, you're this, hey, you're that. And I didn't realize that all the time that I'm telling myself those things, I'm really speaking that into, you could call it into the universe, into existence, whatever, but all those limiting beliefs is what I'm going to get as long as I'm telling myself those things.
Right. Yeah. So it's basically you've got a negative voice sometimes in the back of your head that's kind of where you think, it stops you from taking a leap is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I talk myself, I get this great idea, what I think is a great idea. And by the time it even comes time to take the first step, I've talked myself out of it because I've told myself all the reasons why I'm not going to be able to do it, or all the reasons why I'm going to fail, or all the reasons why I'm dumb for trying to do what it is that I'm going to do. So right. I talked myself out of even taking the first step.
Right. Well, I will tell you one thing, you're going to fail, you know, you're going to fail. And that's not even a negative voice. That's just from personal experience. Cause I've kind of always been almost the polar opposite of that, in the sense where the first step, the first step was always the easier step for me. Like I was always trying to try new things and doing this and that. And I would get all, you know, I would be excited and I've got the confidence to go for it, you know? But the thing I've learned over time is, I mean, I've had so many failed attempts at so many things, but those failed attempts are really what have gotten me to where I'm at now, where the attempts aren't as they're not failing, you know? So that the ventures that I am going about, I'm being more successful in because of those failures. And so the first one, the second one, hell, maybe not even the third one may not hit. You may not figure it out, but, listening to that negative voice is only going to hold you back. And even if you do not succeed in the way that you want to, like we spoke about on the first episode, I've learned that the failures are what actually teach you how to succeed in the long run, you know, or those things. And so, man, that negative voice will totally mess with you though, because I was like, what I mean by opposite is it would start out opposite of you, but then I would slowly go that route. Cause as I started to fail, then those failures would feed that voice that you're talking about now. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, as time would go on, I would drop off or I'd lose motivation. And, you know, you're trying something new. So you start to make mistakes and all this. And then the voice would come in, that exact same voice you're talking about would come in. I'm one of the hardest people on myself, and I'm hard on other people too. So I used to be a lot harder on other people. I'm loosening up also. But I'm so hard on myself, man. And that voice is, I used to use it as a fuel. Like those same things, you're a piece of shit, you know, you're a loser or whatever, mm-hmm. like, and it would fuel me and I would pull it back together, whether it be competing in something, as small as a game and I'd be losing, that voice in my head would talk so much shit to myself and I would fuel myself and then it would work. And it works for the small things, but then I learned it where it really held me back is I would quit down the road on an adventure because that voice would start to match up with the success that I was not having. But the mm-hmm. success that you're not having is not definite and it's not forever. It's gonna be there. And so the biggest thing that took me a while was with my first venture when I kind of decided that like, I'm going to try and grow this electrical business. You know, my dad was always an electrician and, you know, he had got his contractor's license and I had moved down here to help him. And I always felt like business was entrepreneurship was in my blood and I really enjoyed it. So I said, you know, hey, I'm going to try and figure out how to grow this thing. Let's build a legit business. And like, you don't know what you're doing at first, like, and you can't hold yourself to that standard of like, of succeeding right away because it's just not going to happen most of the time. Sure, some people hit and it works out, right? But like most of the time, you're going to fail so much. You're going to make all these mistakes, and that's when that negative voice really comes into play too. So, you know, I totally understand what you're saying, and I can relate in a different sense where, you know, I would always pull the trigger, but then after that I would drop off. And now I'm starting to learn to not listen to that voice and, take the losses. And this is a much better way of explaining it. A loss versus a failure. Take the loss on the chin and just dude, like, man, I make mistakes all the time now. And if you watch the difference between where I was versus where I'm at now, just from the last probably 6 or so years is I don't even miss a beat or a step when something hits me in the face. I'm still in stride. I'm still running. And, you know, I just try to think of solutions versus sitting there and dwelling on, you know, what just happened to me or us or the business or whatever, you know? And so that's my personal take on it. So
why do you think you and I are so different when it comes to taking that first step? We still have that voice that creeps in, mm-hmm. just at different stages of our journey.
I think life, like our childhoods were a lot different.
lot different.
You know, I think that your guys is, I think your parents maybe controlled a lot more than my parents did. And so they kind of probably, I mean, your parents are awesome from what I've seen, you know, like,
for sure.
It's like, yeah, they're totally different issues though. You know what I mean? Like, you, it's so crazy. 'Cause like, as a kid from the outside in, I'd be like, wow. But then I, now that I know you and I see the dynamic as a whole, it's like just different problems, different.
It's
different,
still wow. Yeah. Just a different wow.
Just different problems, man. And I think that my, one of the things that my childhood experience did for me really well is I figured things out a lot on my own from an early age. So
I have
that confidence of taking that first step. Versus, I think that a childhood that it was like yours could have been, maybe a little bit more control. You guys grew up in that church, the LDS church and stuff. And that is a pretty common factor, from what I've seen in those families, you know, and their families are just looking out for you is what they think, you know, like I'm just trying to line my kid up for success. And I think I know the best way. And so there's a lot of controlling aspect. And I seen that in, I see that in a few families that I've seen grow up in that way. And then there's a lot of good qualities that come from that also. But then I do see some hindrance in, maybe some confidence and being able to, you know, take that first step. And so that's my opinion. You know, I don't know how you've seen, I mean, now you know my background, you've been in it, you've seen some of, you know, you were there while I grew up basically.
Yep. Yep.
You know, would you agree at all on that? I mean,
yeah, no, I totally would. That's exactly what I was thinking when I asked the question, was just looking back to like how different our childhood, what the childhoods were. And like you were saying, like you had to figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. There was really no one to fall back on. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, my mom worked real hard, and she was gone a lot. And then my brother and my dad worked hard too, you know, but like he worked hard kind of, to get us out racing, you know? And when I was younger, I wasn't really into that. So I don't know, I was kind of on my own, in a sense. And, you know, in that way, I always felt that way, at least. Maybe it wasn't 100% true at times, but I definitely felt isolated in that sense. You know, and I honestly only got into racing, I kind of forced myself into racing just so I could be with my brother and my dad, you know, and be less alone. And then I eventually grew to love it. I didn't care for it when I was younger. I just didn't feel I honestly just didn't want to compete with my brother, probably in a retrospect. I just seen that as by the time I got into riding a little bit more, my brother was so dominant. He's just so dominant. And I got to see that all the time. And I was his biggest fan growing up. I mean, shit, still am, you know? Yeah. And there's nobody that cheers that guy on harder from the sideline than me. When he's out there racing, I feel like I'm racing. And so as a kid, that was such a huge, tall order for me to try and step out and do. And I didn't feel the need to do that. I wanted to go my own route. And that's also just the type of person I am, you know, you know, I just was always, you know, so I could say that I felt alone at times and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of also, I don't know if that created the person that didn't listen to people and just wanted to do my way and all that, or if that person was always there from the beginning. But I do know that I did feel alone. I did feel like I had to figure out a lot for myself. You know, nobody was sitting down doing my homework with me or doing anything like that. You know, and so, and I certainly wasn't going to do it, you know, I just wanted to get outside and play and have fun. And that's just the way my brain worked. And for a long time, I actually just thought I was stupid. Come to find out, I'm not stupid. And, I just didn't want to, I just couldn't pay attention basically, but yeah.
Oh, you mean being trapped in a classroom with a bunch of having to be for 8 hours a day forced to listen to a teacher.
And I would fixate on things, you know, like, so the fixation for me as a kid, when the more I grow and look back, is somebody telling me I couldn't leave, You know, there was this controlling aspect of school that I could not get past, especially when it's just something, topics and stuff that I have zero interest in. You have to get me interested. And once I'm interested, you're going to have me like a hook. You're going to hook into me with it. And once you do hook into me with it, I learned, oh no, you're not stupid. You just need to, you do have an attention issue for sure, but you need to be interested in the thing. And I didn't realize that until I did some college and, you know, I'm paying for it. So, you know, it felt more in my control and I was able to study. And then I joined into the EMT program and was top of my class there. And people were telling me, dude, this guy's so smart. This guy's so smart. And I'm like, dude, I got F's my entire 18 years of school, like D's and F's, you know? And so, it was crazy to see people say that about me, but you know, we got a little sidetracked there, but like, I agree with you in that sense of that. Yeah. It did feel like we were left to kind of figure things out on our own. My dad also, we also worked from a young age, you know, we worked with my dad and worked in the field with him. And, you know, we were doing home remodels, we were doing electrical work and this, and, that just even the amount, Jeff was even in the field a lot longer cause he was homeschooled a lot longer than I was. And I think that also has created a very productive child and then into adulthood for him, working from a young age. And I think that has something to do into it. And my dad was hard on us at work too, like not in a bad way, in a good way. You know, like, well, you know, we worked us hard, you know, that free labor, baby, you know,
yeah.
Although it wasn't free, you know, it was to get Jeff to the track. And so Jeff was earning his way from a young age. So having that responsibility of I'm working to get myself out to the track. And so I can achieve my goals there. And then, you know, eventually I was doing the same thing, you know, and, was working with my dad and paying for my racing and stuff. And so I think that created a little bit more, of that willingness to step out and fend for yourself, because the reality is at first entrepreneurship is so scary because there's no hourly wage, you know, it's like, it's so, there's so much peace to just, it's a trap. In my opinion, it feels like peace of mind to go work 9 to 5 for somebody else. Right. It feels like peace, but real peace for me is now creating revenue sources and streams my own way. And once they're there, they're there, man. Like, you've built up a business enough to where it is providing for you and it is providing for your family, and you control every aspect of it. And yeah, you don't ever get to clock out technically, but you're also not out there slaving to help somebody else create their dream. And that's where my peace of mind is finally at. I have done it well 2 times technically, because we built out the Clark Electric side into the Union side and we were crushing. And then COVID happened and everything went to shit on that note. And now we had to completely go back to zero. And I basically have just figured out how to rebuild the business into the private route now. And we're finally doing well there. You know, it's taken almost a year of straight grinding, but now I've done it twice. And that, to be successfully able to provide 2 times now, has given me the confidence to go out in other ventures now. And so it's just that first step, man, that first step for you. And, that first year of just, of grinding in a actual, you know, to where the ball is in your hand, completely. You know, you've got experience, you know, helping your dad build business and stuff like that, but it will be different. It will be a little different once it's you are completely at the head of everything. And, but that first year, maybe 2 years, hell, maybe only 6 months, who knows? It's going to be tough, but there will be a flip in your brain where eventually that confidence and that voice will start to change. But that voice was there for me too, dude. Like, I look back at where I was at with the electrical side when I had other, you know, I had my own Core MX deal up in St. George, and I had done these little ventures, and I was making good money there, you know. But literally, I came onto the Clark Electric side, and, you know, we didn't even have, like, I mean, there it was just Jeremy, my boy Jeremy, and my dad, and they had another guy that worked for him sometimes and stuff, and it was just us. And I'm like, how the hell are we going to build this thing? Let's go. I was out walking all of Southern California, freaking going facility to facility, trying to kind of duplicate what we already had, which was a couple of service contracts with, or a service contract with Brookdale Senior Living and stuff. And I'm like, so I'm like, okay, if we're making that much money there doing that, I'm going to do that with other facilities. I learned real quick that it wasn't that easy. And, you know, kind of this Brookdale setup that we had was kind of just like this. It was like this something that we were never going to duplicate again. It was a very good, deal for us. And, since then we'll never have anything like that. Everything else has been 10 times harder to build out. Yeah, man. And I look back now with the, once we went back to zero and I restarted in that private space, which is where we were at originally, I look back now and I'm like, dude, I executed this year so much better than my first year of actually trying to go after it, you know? And it's crazy. And that only happened from failure after failure, or loss after loss after loss. Success, loss, loss, win, loss. And then it's just a constant uphill battle. Pushing that boulder up the hill is really the best way to describe building a business. And so, but I mean, you got some stuff going on with, this new, what do you guys call that setup that you guys got going on right now?
Oh, it's called the Inner Circle.
Yeah. Up the here Inner in Circle, Boise. That's right. Yeah, yeah, cool. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know we've talked a little bit about the texting or through text and whatnot, but
it's actually where I heard this analogy, and it has to do with what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Before we hop into that, I heard this this GPS analogy. So when you go into Maps, what does Maps need to work? It needs your current location and it needs the destination that you're going to.
Right. Yeah.
So when you press start on Maps and you start driving, when you make a wrong turn, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. The Maps redirects and tells you need to go that direction. So when we're going down this journey and we make a wrong turn, what do we as humans like to do to ourselves? Mm-hmm. Like to beat ourselves up, mm-hmm. tell us that, hey, you're dumb, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But your GPS doesn't ever do that. Your GPS has no emotions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like so when that. You take that wrong turn, you just get back on track, yeah, redirect.
I like that. And you know
dust
what,
yourself
though?
Off.
Think about it even like this. You could go even further with that analogy because it's beautiful. I like that. So think of your starting point as California, okay? Mm-hmm. And the finish point is New York. Okay. But, or let's say the California coast. Okay. This whole West Coast is your starting point, and this whole, East Coast, ocean line over here, coastline mm-hmm. is your final point. And yeah, you started with this destination in, you know, New York, and you're over here in California and you start that long journey. Well, that exact destination point is going to change, right? Over time. And so, you can't really get hung up on making a wrong turn here and there and beat yourself up too bad, because that exact destination point is most likely going to change unless you're some just incredible visionary, you know. But even then, probably it's the same concept here. It's for me, that exact destination point will change. It could drop down a little bit down the coastline, but it's still on the East Coast over there, because that's all the East Coast line really is abundance and a healthy family and a healthy relationship with your wife, your kids, and you're making good enough money to support that, right? That's all the way over here. But yeah, that little destination red dot point is going to change. So when you veer off course a little bit, you really just got to take it as a lesson. And, you know, I like that. It does kind of correct. If you begin with the end in mind, it really does help you stay course a lot better. And I've always tried to have the final destination point in mind. If you come to me a year ago and heard my game plan, you come to me now, you hear my game plan, it's different. It's different, but I'm still on that same journey. And during that, throughout that journey, you'll get all these achievement points and these goals reached and all that. And then finally, at the end, at whatever age you are, you're retiring, okay? It's like that destination point's different, but now you've built up all this abundance in all those categories, right? And it's because you had that end in mind of that's where I'm going and I don't care how I get there, but we're going to figure it out. And you got to kind of just chip and away at it. It's
yeah. And with your analogy of getting from the West Coast to the East Coast, is there only one road to get to the East Coast?
No, there's so many. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that the West Coast is shit, you know, you know, this is we're going from California where this shit is going downhill and we're going to the Graceland over in Florida, you know?
Yeah, let's say Florida, fuck New York.
No, that's just funny how it started that. I only said that because my starting point was over here, but I don't know. Actually, I'd say my actual legit starting point where I started this. But where I finally gained enough confidence to actually start pushing that boulder up the hill. Cause before it was always like, I'd start, I'd give up. I'd say the starting point for me was probably St. George, Utah. I had successes before that, you know, when I moved up to live up in Provo area with you guys.
Yeah.
I had a lot of bad moments up there, but I also, you know, got a decent job. They were promoting me in that job. And then I got the property management position and I was living there for free and all this stuff. So I've always had that grind on me, but I was doing it for somebody else that whole time. It wasn't until St. George where I started to step out and was like, you know what? I got skill sets here. And you know what finally did it for me? I mean, we can go into depth about another time about where I think that my personal growth changed in that time period over there was. But like for me, what did it for me was getting into weightlifting and getting to the level I was at with 4 or 5 years straight of training. That was the first time I really put that much work into something and didn't give up. And I was just addicted. You were not getting me to not train. You were not getting me to eat poorly. You were not doing anything. Everything was perfect. I'd go out and party every now and then. Don't get me wrong. And even then I would just try and eat. If the rule of thumb for me back then was always just whatever your situation is, always find the healthiest route you can go. You know, yeah. So if you're out, and you got to eat out, which I almost never did. You got to do that. You're hitting a flame broil. You're hitting a Waba. You're hitting something like that. You're not getting fast food. I didn't eat fast food for years. I didn't touch soda. I didn't do anything. Once I got the when you start training like that and people fall off, they always fall off before they get seriously good results. Because the people that hold on long enough to get some real results, I'm talking like jaw-dropping different result. Those people, they see the result and therefore they stick with it a lot longer versus the person that quits prior to seeing the real change that they could do for themselves in a year. And it's the same thing with business. It's the same thing with entrepreneurship. It's the same thing. Once you really see that you can succeed and that you are making a difference and that you can do this, it becomes addicting. It becomes like a game and it becomes way easier to stay on course. And it's the same thing with training. So that's when my turning point and my confidence began to change, because when I quit racing, I just partied, drank, and worked Monday through Friday. And I put on a gang of weight. I wasn't in shape anymore and blah, blah, blah. And then I got into weight training and I got into living a healthier lifestyle. And I mean, within 4 years, I would have never imagined that I could get to that level of fitness ever. And so, once I did that, it gave me the confidence to kind of start my way. And then I started training, my Core MX deal up in St. George. I was running the Maxxis race support truck with Mike. And, I just started to kind of get that bug of doing things, you know, starting to marketing, getting t-shirts and this and that, and trying to figure out how we could go about this. And so you know, that's where my journey started to make a pivot for sure. And so, anyway,
so you're saying seeing the success of your physical body change, mm-hmm. that gave you the, hey, I can fucking do this.
Yeah. Cause it was a physical appearance change, but it was more about it was more about seeing your hard work pay off.
Yeah.
Because up until you see it pay off, you're just working your ass off for nothing. It's what it feels like, right? You're just like, fuck, I just said no to 3 bomb-ass parties, you know, 19, 20 years old. I just said no to 3 weekends of partying in a row. Those could have been some good times, fear of missing out. And I haven't eaten anything that tastes good in a while, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Grilled chicken and rice. That's right,
baby. I mean, dude, I lived on it. And so sweet potatoes all day. Yep. And literally, so you're just doing it to do it at first. Yeah, sure, you start to feel a little better, blah, blah, blah. And that definitely also helped my pivoting change was when you feed the gut what it requires, your serotonin levels, all these things that were issues probably for me at a young age where eating clean and training got me in a much better headspace because it really does change your brain chemistry as well. And so all those things, it's like a momentum game at that point, and you start getting traction. And I started to see things more clearly versus from a negative, you know, depleted standpoint almost. And so, yeah, man, seeing hard work pay off is if you're a person that gives up easily or you are scared to take your first step, talking to everybody out there, you got to grind until you see the result. And once you see your hard work pay off, it really becomes a lot easier to do that hard work. And it really becomes so like second nature almost. And don't get me wrong, we have these little weekends that throw you and blah, blah, blah. And you just got to get good about getting a grip back on everything and getting the ball rolling. That happened with me and my health, you know, threw me for a loop. And so, you know, I had a ton of health problems for years, that came out of nowhere. And so it really messed me up. I'm really just now getting mentally to a place where I'm not so negative about it, you know? And so these things, life happened, dude. And so it's never just this perfect trajectory up to success. It's this just slow up, down, going from left low to right high. And you're going to have highs, you're going to have lows, but the goal is to just keep pushing it until you get to where you want to get, you know? And of course I'm not there. You're not there. We're not where we want to be yet. But, I do feel like, all the failures and all that stuff is worth talking about for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
I mean, that's kind of what got this whole thing going was telling myself all these limiting beliefs and something that I've started doing recently to change that. So if there's anybody out there listening to this that does what I was talking about at the beginning of the call, that tells yourself you're dumb, you can't do this, whatever it is, we've all got them. So instead of waking up and saying those things to myself, I started setting some goals, and I set some financial goals. I set some personal fitness goals and things like that. And what I started to do was tell myself the I am statements. Mm. And whether it's a sticky note on the mirror or I have it on the notes on my phone, but like some of those statements are, I am a real estate investor. Mm. I am the healthiest I've ever been. Mm-hmm. Whatever they are. And like even some of those financial goals that I have dollar values set to them. Mm. And I'll be telling myself, I will make this much a month. I will make this much a year. I am. And it starts to reprogram all those limiting beliefs.
Yeah. 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 I hear a lot about that. It's something I could probably work on because my wife tells me all the time I'm too hard and negative on myself. But it's like I used it for fuel for so long that, it really was a good fuel for me in a lot of ways, but it also, now that, you know, I'm recovering from, you know, that brutal long COVID that I got the first time I got COVID back in 2020. And, you know, I am more negative as a whole. And so, and I've been trying to fix that, and things like that are something that I could work on for sure. And I've been trying to do it, like to others, never taking care of myself. And so like, you know, but for real, that's what I, like, I just
toxic trait number one,
shit about you, Jarrett. But I just realized I was being negative towards my friends and family, which I had worked so hard on for a long time, not to do that. To make those changes, and it's almost like getting as sick as I did reverting me back to some old ways and programming.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just not who you are. And I decided that a long time ago. And so luckily my friends and my family, that they know that I was just going through some shit probably, but like I started focusing on speaking more positively towards them. And I've been trying to do it for myself too lately, but I just get so hung up on like grinding basically that I don't. It's the same thing with this stupid COVID situation that I got a couple weeks ago. I knew I had something, like a little cold. And yeah. What did I do? I worked out every single day. I ran every other day. Even when I was feeling like shit, I went to Glen Helen at 3 p.m. after being sick for 4 days. I finally got to Glen Helen and I was riding, and it was nobody out there. The track was beat, nice and rutted. It was Derek Drake. Who was the other guy? Dylan Schwartz. Both are on the same Suzuki team out there, and myself out there. And I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to go see if I can, you know, hang with these guys for a little bit. And, I like literally was like falling asleep and just falling over in the turn. And I'm like, I pulled off after just a few laps. I'm like, something's not right, dude. You are struggling like physically out there, which I haven't been lately, and mentally, like to where I'm coming into a rut and I'm just like literally wanting to fall asleep. I remember falling over the second moto just in a turn from just, I couldn't even tell you why. It's like I fell asleep in the turn.
That's
like,
insane.
And so I finally got my wife got out there and brought my daughter out, and I just was like, dude, I'm not even going to ride anymore. I'm going to ungear. Something's not right. And then 2 days later, I'm like, I think that cold we had was COVID, because I'm starting to have all this long COVID crap come back where I can't breathe, my muscles and all this. And it's like, I got to start paying attention to myself or my health or something, man.
Yeah.
Like when things go real wrong, I finally realize it and I know something's up. But up until then, it's like, why did I keep going like I did? Like, I don't understand it. And so 100%. Where I'm at right now is because of the training with COVID again. And so it's nowhere near as bad as the first time, thank God. But I definitely can't go where I worked out again Monday, Tuesday this week, and it was 100% a mistake. Pretty much survived the rest of the week, and you know, to the point where I was almost dreading the podcast this morning. I was so tired. I was just like, man, am I going to be in the right headspace for this? But as soon as we get chit chatting, you know, we're good to go.
yeah, I know how that goes.
But yeah, man, dude, that's good, dude. I'm happy for you that you're kind of seeing some things for yourself, you know? And that's what it's about. Just little tweaks here and there, man. I've been tweaking things, consecutively for the last 10 years. And so that's all it is a tweak. And I feel like people, I know that Elise is like this. It's like, there, once you make a mistake or say things didn't go as planned, or like you come to that realization, like you just did about the starting, getting out and taking that first leap, right? Instead of seeing it as a positive, like, okay, cool, just came to that realization. Now I can take that knowledge and move forward and move on. And when I start seeing myself do that, I can say, this is a problem that you've already figured out, and therefore it doesn't have to continue to be a problem. Instead of doing that, what people tend to do is they beat themselves up in a negative sense, and then they feel bad about themselves, and then they actually continue to do the same thing over and over and over instead of growing from it and moving on, and they beat themselves up and prevent themselves from moving on, you know? And so It's crazy that we do that. It's just human nature almost with certain people. And so I did it. That's the only reason I can explain it like I just did, is because I came to realize that years ago. And so, you know, it's just, or like when something would happen, I would, you know, back in the day, you know, an altercation would happen or something, I'd lose control. The next day I beat myself up about it. And then I'd get depressed, and then I was more likely to go do the same behavior over and over again, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just little tweaks, and actually, you know, trying to force yourself to make those changes and stuff. So
I think another thing I noticed is you said for the last 10 years, you've been starting and failing and starting and failing, and and you have 10 years worth of failures under your belt. Mm-hmm. When I look back,
shit, I got 32.
Well,
but yeah, I know what you're saying.
No, I hear you, man. But like for the last 10 years, I look at you and me in the last 10 years, and I was grinding and working, but in a comfortable space.
Right.
I had the salary, I had the job, I had the house, I had the white picket fence, all that bullshit. I was very comfortable. And I was also working for somebody else's business. Yeah. And even though there was significant growth and there was a lot of lessons learned and a lot of stress and a lot of heartache going through that, it wasn't mine. Or what, or maybe not even mine, but
you weren't controlling your own destiny.
I had the safety net under me the entire time.
Yep.
It wasn't until moving up here that safety net got pulled out and said, "All right, here you go.
Yep.
Time to sink or swim."
Yeah, and what sucks with that situation is that that safety net prevents you from growth.
Yeah,
I can say that because
even though I thought I was growing the entire time, because we're struggling, we're this.
Right. And you will grow in terms of learning how to run somebody else's business. And so you are growing there in that one area, but you're not in other areas. And I know this because even the first 4 years or so of Clark Electric, we were doing that. I fought it in the beginning where it was like, we got this. We went to the union. Okay. I worked my ass off with my dad trying to get us up enough money and get us to a place where we could bring my brother on. But for us to bring my brother on, we had to go union, and then but by the time what we had to pay him and his package, you know, all that, it's like, how are we going to afford $200,000 a year? Right. And so we got into this program when we decided to go the union route, we got into this program where we were retrofitting all of LA to LED basically. And it was for this program for LADWP. They are basically paying us to go and get everybody converted from fluorescent to LED to save them money in the long run, right? Mm-hmm. So all this money is getting dished out. The problem with that was, and it's so awesome to look back and see that my instincts were there from the beginning, because I didn't know what I was doing, but I fought it. I said, we have to do other things, because this is a spigot that is not controlled by us. And at any moment, that spigot could be turned off. And what did we do for the next 4 years? We developed probably some of the best systems fucking out there in that program, right? After COVID hit and we came back and tried to come back into that program shut down for a year. We came back. My brother was gone at that point, and it was just me, my general foreman, and we had about 15 guys total, 12 guys in the field, and then three. I had a project manager underneath me, my boy Josue that I brought down from Vegas, and then my buddy Todd, who's now our apprentice for us, was running the shop. And we had a space in LA, we had an office space and all that, and we had a system, dude. I mean, we built a seriously great system, but that took all of my time, and we weren't a real business. We were a subcontractor for LADWP, and that is it. We were not a business. There was nothing there. I did take the time with COVID that year off from that program to really start developing the company, creating the logo, creating the website, doing all this stuff. And I started learning how to bid commercial projects. And I really tried to fill some of the gaps where I knew we were going to need somebody's expertise that we didn't have. But it's the same thing, dude. You had the safety net of that. We had the safety net of LADWP good money coming in. Good money, man. We were pushing, I mean, man, we were racking in like $6,000 to $8,000 a day, Monday through Friday, every week, and just crushing it. I mean, there are days better than that, way better than that. But like, yeah, man, we were crushing it. My payroll was insane because we had 12 union guys running out there. I mean, insane for us. I know that you guys over at Walton had some serious payroll, but like, yeah, dude, it's crazy. But we had that same exact safety net. That safety net prevented us from being a real company. So that by the time that spigot was finally officially turned off, they kind of bled all of their contractors dry, and then they, from that way I understand it, they shut it down. I don't know if it restarted or what, but they said, we'll let you know when we got the work to restart again. I said, nah, I'm good. I made the decision to, nah, even if you guys restart, I'm not coming back. I decided, let's start over. Let's leave the union. Let's liquidate what we can, and let's pivot and try to build a real company. And I had to figure out everything. I had to figure out how to bring business in that wasn't there. You know, we had how do you create business out of thin air? And then how do you duplicate that? And then how do you create systems that you can then duplicate into hiring more people? And then how do you do this? And so there's all this stuff. And so really, honestly, I learned how to create a great system, one big system for the LADWP program prior to this, where we're at now. And that definitely has taught me how to create systems, because I mean, we were, anybody that worked for me was pretty impressed with what we created as far as a system for that. But it's different than having your own actual system and creating, you know, and learning how to market and do all these things, and your Google ads, and my website was just a backdrop for bids, versus there was no optimization. How did we do all this? So there's just step by step of new things, new learning, new growth. And it's really only been for a year now, and we wasted almost, in my opinion, wasted 5 years, you know, because it really hindered us in the long run. And yeah, we made some good money, and it's helped help us make some moves that we're in now to make some more moves for the future. But it really hindered us. And I said from the beginning, even as a dumb kid, didn't know what I was doing, I said, why are we putting all of our eggs into one basket? And it turned out to be true, in my opinion. So, you know, it was cool to see that instinct and that intuition was there from the get-go. I just didn't know how to run off of it. And now I'm learning how to do that. But it's the exact same situation. You see what I'm trying to compare the two, like your situation versus that situation, how they're the same.
Totally.
Yeah. So, but anyway, did you have any more to touch on that? My bad. I got running on it.
No, you're good. Sick. I'll interrupt you when I got something to say.
Right. What's up with this Inner Circle thing you guys got going? No, I want to hear about it straight up.
Yeah. So basically what the Inner Circle is a community. It's a community for people who are trying to grow, people who are trying to learn, people who are trying to step out of maybe what they're doing now as a career, and maybe they want to go a different direction and just don't know how, or like in my case, don't have the confidence how to. Mm-hmm. And so the group's led by two of my good friends, Chase and Travis, and they both have very unique backgrounds and unique stories and also unique expertise. Chase is a mortgage loan officer. I don't know what the technical terms are. It's technical
boring
title. Yeah, exactly. But kidding. Basically he's
sorry,
got
bro, I don't even know you.
He's got a real estate and lending background, and Travis has worked on Wall Street for a bunch of years.
Nice.
Knows investing, knows how to raise money. But
that's super crucial right there.
Oh dude, totally. Yeah. And he's taken that and he's coached all kinds of entrepreneurs across the country on how to grow whatever it is that they're trying to grow. So what's cool is moving up here to Boise is it's like its own little world up here as far as entrepreneurs go. Like it's full of white collar guys that grew up just like you were talking about, working on the farm or working out in the field or whatever it is they were doing. Mm-hmm. And now they're business owners. And
yeah, because I mean, it's like expanding up there, right? I mean, Boise is just growing. It's becoming like control. A metropolitan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I heard some numbers the other day where, like, before COVID took off, like, the population of the whole Treasure Valley was like 800,000. And just in the last couple of years, it's almost doubled.
Wow.
Yeah. When you look at,
there's no California mass exodus. I swear.
Bro, we moved into a brand new community. There's 100 homes in this community, right, and I'm pretty sure 75 of them are from California.
Yeah, it's like, homie, I got a family and friend mass exodus. Don't tell me California. Like, you know, I got so many people that have left, you know. And so I've kind of positioned myself now to where I ain't going nowhere for a little while at least. And, you know, just to touch on that real quick, I got a I got a piece of mail in from the California Tax Franchise Board. Okay. I was scared. I was sweating. I'm like, my shit ain't even open yet, and they're coming after me. no, but I open it, and get this, dude. 7% tax to anybody, and I have to look this up. So please, if somebody knows that maybe I'm reading this envelope out of a total emotion. No, but it doesn't even affect me. But if you own a franchise but live out of the state, additional 7% tax.
Fuck you.
Unreal. And they're doing that because there is a mass exodus. People that own businesses are living out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get better tax rates, right? I don't know if and this is something we'd have to look up, but so when you move, you got an LLC, right? And now you change the address to that LLC, but you have branches open out here. Are you saving money in taxes if you're living out in a state that has lower state tax? How does it work? I don't know. So
I think that's the idea.
Yeah, because that's kind of what I figured. That's the only reason that they would be doing this additional state tax, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're getting their money either way. And I know that they've talked about taxing businesses if they pack up and leave California and move their business to another state. It's almost like a death tax, you know? It's like
they're getting punished.
They're getting punished now, and so it's kind of ridiculous on that note. But like,
who's the bald guy on Shark Tank?
Oh yeah, dude, I love that guy, Kevin O'Leary.
Yes, yeah. So I heard him on a podcast the other day. No. He was on CNN. It was a short little clip from CNN. And they were asking him some business question. And he's like, any new business that I start, I refuse to start it in New York City, California, or any of these left-wing states, because that's where businesses go to die. 100%. Those were his words.
It's totally true. You know, like I said, I really try not to talk on subjects that I don't know enough about yet. And
sure.
So I'm trying not to go on the taxes too hard, but I do have to do more research on that franchise tax, just because Elise and I had already talked about, like, we get three of these. If we like the first gym, we're going to open more. And if we like the first one, we're going to open more. And if we do that, eventually their goal is for them to run on their own, basically. And, you know, we were going to maybe move. And so if we don't end up at the beach, our goal is the beach. We need to be at the ocean. The only way we can put up with California is by living in those states. They are typically conservative areas, you know, great families, and they're cleaner. There's just something about being next to the ocean, obviously, that makes people in a better mood too, man. Yeah. There's like, it for sure does that to Elise and I. So if we can't get to the ocean within, you know, a few years, then we're going to consider out of state options. And so, you know, it's just scary to see that I'll be, you know, hit with that tax, and maybe that tax ends up being close to the same by saving some money on one end to that. Who knows? But the point is to get better, not stay the same, right? It's like, we're going to move to get better situation, not to still have California. I don't even live in California, and California is still affecting me.
Still raping me.
You know? So, but yeah, so, anyway, we're on the Boise subject of that. And so the idea is like this, it's like a coaching program in a sense. Like, how does the curriculum, or how does the coaching go? Cause it's gotta be from a virtual aspect, right?
Yeah. So we have two virtual calls a month, two coaching calls a month, and then we have one in-person, coaching event as well. And we're in the middle of creating a 6-month curriculum that helps you mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually. It goes through and hits all these buckets that we as humans need filled every day. Mm. If your fitness bucket is overflowing because you've got a 6-pack and you're living at 5% body fat and all that stuff, but your financial bucket's completely empty, we got to get that back in balance.
So you got to have like a 4-pack. and then grow the wallet a little bit more.
You got to be comfortable at 12% body fat.
Right. Back that up, though. Did you say sexually?
Oh, yeah. All of them, man. Oh, yeah. I mean, we've all got... We stay very surface when it comes to...
That's gold. No, that's cool, man. And so it's funny. The online coaching space is super lucrative. Or I shouldn't say coaching. The online... what's the word I'm looking for? Education space is super lucrative. Okay.
Oh yeah.
I know guys that you can do it with entrepreneurship, right? So say, and I've thought about later on once I've created, hopefully what I am in the process of trying to succeed at, I could create something like that, but like that online, getting some people the information they need, but having a huge footprint of people to do it with, because the virtual online aspect is super crucial. I always go ahead.
I was just going to say, I know this guy that started a course a couple of years ago. He was a nurse and all he was doing was helping other people pass their nursing, whatever test or exam they have to take to become an actual nurse. He started a course to help people pass that, and the dude now brings in over $100,000 a month just from those fucking courses that he recorded a year ago.
Yeah.
Doesn't even do anything anymore.
I was listening to the How to of Business, I believe, is the podcast name. I always forget the name of it, but it's just this guy that's just constantly interviewing people and talking to people about what they've done in the entrepreneurial space and stuff like that. And he was talking to this guy that's in the online coaching space or the online educational space. And, he's crushing it also. And I always had the idea to do, we're talking about that journey where you always have this idea of what you're trying to get to. When I was training kids when I was doing the Core MX, which was on and off the bike training up in St. George, I had the idea that we could eventually grow into that space and get more of a because you can only train so many kids at the track, right? But if we could create an app on a phone that has educational videos and all these things that and information to help somebody grow on the bike and off the bike, and then market that app and then also just have a flat rate monthly fee for them to have access to it. But you get out to 100,000 people, that's bankroll, right? And so it is lucrative, but you just got to get out and do it. And now there is somebody that's kind of actually executing it now. It's AJ Catanzaro. He's teamed up with the Lawrence brothers. They've got the Moto Academy, I believe it's called. And I think they're doing really well. And if you're going to learn how to ride a dirt bike, it's good. It should be from Jet Lawrence or Hunter Lawrence. I mean, it's clear as day, but yeah, dude, they're hitting it now, but that's a good space to get into. You said that there's a physical event. You guys do a monthly one, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we wanted to stand out from some of the other groups that are out there, because almost all the other groups are only online based. But yeah, we like to do an in-person meeting every single month. We have the people from our group that are there, but we also leave a couple extra seats open so we can invite other people, into the meetings as well. So current members can bring a plus one or whatever they like to do.
Of course. And just out of the goodness of your heart, of course.
Yeah, no, really. These events are free.
I'm just saying, but low key, there are marketing aspects, right? I mean, like if you can get the word out to other people, that's what I'm saying.
100%.
I was just being stupid. And so, that's cool. So are you guys right now currently targeting mostly people in your area, the Boise area, so that they can then come to those meetings, or how is that going to work as you guys scale out? What do you think?
So that's our goal right now, is to keep it in Boise. We have a couple people from California in the group. Sometimes they make it to the in-person meetings in Idaho. Sometimes they don't. We've got a couple people from the East Coast as well. They see the value in the coaching calls and being a part of the community, and they still want to join even though they can't make the in-person meetings.
Nice.
So yeah, the goal in the future is to keep this group local, but expand to other cities. So if we're in Boise right now, we have a certain number of people that we want to get to in the group before we start expanding anywhere else. But we're going to go from city to city all across the West Coast, probably start building in Salt Lake or Seattle or Portland or some of those bigger areas. But keep these groups to a somewhat small size. Like I was in another coaching group and there was tens of thousands of people in that group. And to me, it just, when you have that many people, you can't, it's almost too big. You can't meet anybody. You can't really get help and support, like personal help and support from the group, even though you'd think with having more people, you could get more support, but it kind of has the opposite effect. When you're trying to get people to come into a room and be vulnerable and tell their story and open up, it's a lot easier to do that when there's 8 people in the room versus 800 people in the room.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's cool. I dig it. So right now it's like a membership monthly fee, right? And basically, it covers all the, what we just talked about. You're getting that online, the coaching aspect, and you guys are creating like a curriculum on that, that you can follow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's cool. We have a 6-week financial curriculum already done and working. Mm-hmm. It's just working on those other buckets that we were talking about.
Nice. No, that's cool. So is it directly through the website or do you guys use some other like out, another company that helps you like organize all the curriculum and do all that?
No, that's all online. That's all built by us
in the website basically, or it's like
a portal. Yes. Yes. Portal. So there's a portal in the website to get you the 30-day blueprint. That's just a brief overview of the 6-month curriculum that we're putting together. Mm. So yeah, there are tangible resources that we give out as well.
Nice, nice. What's your guys' membership fee?
$300 a month.
Nice, nice. That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, you guys keep chipping away at that. How did you guys, or how did you come across meeting the two cats that you're doing it with?
So actually through one of these networking groups, I met Travis a couple years ago through a friend of a friend. We sat down at dinner and I instantly knew there was something different about him versus everybody else that was at the table. Mm. And when we started talking one-on-one, I realized we had not a similar background, definitely not a similar background growing up by any means, but there was a lot of similarities. There was a lot of things that we could connect to. And then him and my wife, Rachel, started talking a lot and just like we always joke when we were still living in California, like Rachel and you and Cody are all like the three stooges. You guys all act the same way. Mm. What makes you tick is all the same. It's right. It's kind of the same with Rachel and Travis. So that's
nice.
That's kind of how we got connected with him. He's the one that invited us up to Boise back in October when I was running that marathon and said, hey, come check it out. All the meantime, he had set us up with a realtor to go look at a bunch of houses that we didn't know about. And so pretty much made this.
Gotcha.
Nice, pushed us, dude, in this direction. Yeah.
Cool, cool. Well, that's good stuff, man. I we just got to keep pushing that boulder, so to speak. And you guys will keep working your way up there. And that's a cool one because you can work on it while working and building, you know, something else, in exactly. the meantime. And so it's really one of those – what's the word I'm looking for? Just an additional revenue stream, and you can help people in the meantime. And that's, not that I'm trying to get a revenue stream out of the podcast by any means, but the podcast is the same. It is the same thing. I just feel like there's a purpose for it, a need for it in today's, day where so many people are just like sucking on the teat of the government and sucking on the teat of other people and helping, like our civilization has grown to this point now where there's these huge corporations everywhere, these huge businesses and all these people that have built their dream, and people are just being taught to go help continue to build those dreams. You know,
somebody else's dreams.
Yeah, so it's just the rich, the wealthy, you know? And so like it's, when in reality, man, we can go out there and do that ourselves, and you really have the power to do anything you want. And I feel that there is a piece to, like we spoke about earlier, controlling your own destiny, and it's only going to help you in your own personal growth, no doubt. And so, you know, hopefully we can inspire people to go out and try and do those things, because I've seen some of the most successful people I know that have climbed the ladder, did well in school, did all those things that I know wish they could go the entrepreneur route, but they just don't, they feel like they don't have that, or they don't have the, they don't have the skill set to do it. When in a reality, man, not many people have the skill set to do it. You know, like, it's just one of those things you got to learn and figure out and grow and keep chipping away at it. You know, and if you can succeed at running somebody else's business, I'm pretty sure you can learn how to run your own. So, you know, it's just one of those things. And so, but anyway, man, we're coming up on just over an hour now. I think that's a good time to kind of come to it. We'll create a little snippet for the inner circle and throw out a post for you guys. People can go check out the Instagram and stuff like that. That's cool. And see what Parker's talking about here on this podcast. We kind of got sidetracked a few times, so didn't get to go too much into detail of what I got going on as far as the gym and all that stuff, but that ain't going anywhere. And so we can get on that on the next episode, no doubt. And I think I'm good at a good you know, turning point for today. What about you?
Yeah, same here.
Cool, bro. Well, everybody, appreciate you all tuning into the first episode. You know, we got some listens out there. Appreciate it. And we will continue to put these out. I got some cool things in, I got some cool guests coming on to talk to us soon. And then we're going to get our buddy who runs his own little, his own company called Earthworks Engineering. We're going to try and get him out here and get Cody out here, get him in the, he'll be physically in the studio, be the first guest of the Venturing Man podcast to come to the studio here in beautiful DeVore Heights, you know, the DeVore Heights, which is really just the peak of San Bernardino, the Dino, but it sounds a lot better, you know. And so our area is nice, okay, but if you go three exits down, you know.
Yeah, just don't go three exits down.
Don't panic, but you might get shot. Nah. But anyway, man, good talking to you, brother, and appreciate you coming on for the episode, and we will all see, and we will speak to y'all soon. And have a good day.
Have a great one.
Later, guys.
See ya.
Oh, and a happy 4th of July to everybody. Be safe. Enjoy yourselves. Just don't drink and drive, and don't do anything I wouldn't do. That's for sure.
Be good or be good at it.
Yeah, buddy. All right, later, guys.